This is Cave Scott Allen of OTCO.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Kuhn from LazyCoder.com.
This podcast is brought to you by JetBrains. JetBrains are moving on with their renowned Visual Studio productivity tool, ReSharper. Early access program for the upcoming ReSharper 6 is now open, highlighted with long-awaited support for JavaScript and CSS, plus code inspections for VB.NET. Support for Razor View Engine is coming up as well, and many new features will be revealed soon. Go try out the early builds of ReSharper 6 at jetbrains.net/ReSharper.
Welcome to this episode of Hurting Code, being recorded on November 10th, 2010. Tonight's guest is Tim Caswell. Tim runs the website howtonode.org, which is a website that is dedicated to node.js. It's actually a blog engine that's written in node.js, which is very interesting. Tim, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. My background is web development, and I picked up Node early on as a hobby. I was working in some PHP shop doing just normal software development, and found this Node thing, and ever since then I've been hooked on it. I actually at one point quit my job and worked on Node full time just until I ran out of money because it was fun. And then I've since started the How to Node blog and moved to the Bay Area out in California, and seems like some days I'm just in the middle of it.
For people that don't know what Node.js is, could you give a quick explanation?
Sure. So Node itself is actually a fairly small layer of the stack. It's a server framework, I guess, that it uses V8, the JavaScript engine of Chrome, and binds a bunch of I/O libraries to it. The unique thing about it, that what makes it so fast, is those I/O libraries are all based on an event loop with non-blocking I/O. So you can write everything from an HTTP server to an IRC server or clients or really anything you want on a server that has I/O, and you can write it in JavaScript and it'll be fast. It's even being used, my current job, as services for mobile phones.
Oh, interesting. We talked some time ago and you told me a really interesting story about a JavaScript conference that didn't have Wi-Fi, but after some node hacking, everything was working. Node hacking and Pringle cans or something.
I don't know the exacts of it, but it was JSConf EU. It was held in Berlin, and it was held at this old Catholic church. And so obviously we couldn't go drilling holes in the walls. And they had a node service that was taking the raw TCP data, splitting it up, and sending it over two directed radios across to some building that had internet connectivity and reconnecting the packets. And it was actually very nice, reliable internet.
Wow. And the website, howtonode.org, is powered by Wheat, which is something that was written in Node. You have that available on your GitHub repository, and it looks like it's pretty amazing. I mean, it's a rather compact. It's not a lot of code there.
That's good. I thought it was a lot of code, but yeah. I guess writing it's a lot more work than reading it.
That's true. The first file that I opened up was 88 lines. The next one was 300 lines. I don't know. When someone says they're going to write a blog engine, I've seen a lot of blog engines over the last few years, and some of them have 10,000 files, and it's crazy.
Well, one advantage to Wheat is there is no administrative backend. So that saves a lot of code. All it does is it takes a Git repository and reads files out of it and presents them as a website.
Yeah, that's interesting. Very interesting, because someone can add to your website just by forking it and then...
Yeah, and they send me a pull request on GitHub and I push it out.
Wow. That's cool.
That's a really neat concept.
You got to get Miguel Diacaza on board with that. He's always talking about his static blog that runs on a CD-ROM. Maybe he'd jump to the next phase here.
It's a great backend.
So, but back to Node, I think a lot of people are familiar with web frameworks or writing things on the server side using technologies like Microsoft's ASP.NET or an MVC type framework like Ruby on Rails. Node is going to be a different experience, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and it's not necessarily targeting the same thing, right? Is Node more about infrastructure compared to I'm going to build something with a user interface?
Not really. I mean, the biggest use case for Node right now is regular websites to replace your RHEL stack or whatever you're using. It's just, it can be used for anything else as well. It's not restricted to that. When you make a Node HTTP server, your Node program is the HTTP server.
Hmm.
It's not something you bind into some Apache or IIS or whatever.
The thing about Node is it's not really... I mean, most of the applications that people are using it for are web-based, but it's really just an abstraction over sockets almost, in some way. I mean, so you could write an FTP server in Node. You could write
Absolutely.
A Gopher server in Node. I've seen it used as a pass-through proxy. Some guy wrote like a 20-line pass-through proxy that did logging, and you could set it up to do file-based caching or memory-based caching, whatever you wanted to do with it. And so that's why there's a ton of frameworks. If you go to the Git repository for Node and you look at the modules page in the wiki, I don't even know how many are there. It seems like they're adding two or three every day. And the last time I checked, I had to scroll for like three page downs to see them all. And they're just kind of all over the map. There's MVC frameworks. There's proxies. There's messaging services. There's queues. There's all sorts of stuff in there. It really is just a really nice abstraction over, you know, network programming, I/O.
Yeah. And that's not even all the packages.
I was seeing some more interesting ones on the knockout list.
Yeah, on Node Knockout.
Yeah. So that was a competition based on whatever you can build on Node?
Yeah, it was a 48-hour competition. You could have libraries, but everything else had to be written from scratch during the 48 hours. And it could be whatever you wanted. And it turned out a whole lot of the entries were based on WebSockets and games, but there were quite a few that were interesting things like a packet decoder or a proxy or something like that.
Well, so you described, you know, Node as being based on an event loop, and you know, you hear this term evented IO. Can you explain a little bit more about what exactly that means? I'm not sure, you know, everybody,
yeah,
including me, really actually, you know, groks what that means.
Yeah, that's a great question. So the whole, and it goes back to the whole reason that Node is fast is, so first of all, blocking I/O is where, say, you're reading something off the disk or off the network, your process stops. It does nothing else until that data comes back. And the only way that modern computers keep from just absolutely crashing is through threads. But threads have a very significant overhead if you're going to have, say, 1,000 of these at the same time, which you often do in some of these real-time web servers. And so instead, what it does is everything is based on callbacks and events. You want to open this file. You say, I want to open this file, and when you get it open, give me the file descriptor, here's a function. And then sometime later, when the file system comes back, which is ages in CPU time, it'll go through the queue of events, and the event loop will go find your callback and give it that data. And so there's this reactor in the core that's just this spinning thing that's grabbing events, processing them, setting up more callbacks for later, and then dying or quitting. And then it checks the queue and sees that there's another thing to process. It just flies through these one at a time. But since nothing is allowed to block the CPU, these all go really fast. So like an analogy I always like to give is, suppose you were going to see the doctor and or the dentist, and you go to the window and the receptionist gives you this form to sign. You just stand there at the window filling it out. You're blocking the line. In an evented system, she hands you the form. You go sit down. The next person in line is served. And then when you get done with the form, you get back in the line and turn it in. That's how an event loop works.
And the idea is that you're going to be more efficient at processing all the people that are coming up to the window, right?
Yeah, the idea is that you're never waiting on I/O, because in CPU time, I/O is, I mean, dependent. If it's network I/O, it could be thousands or hundreds of thousands of times slower than maybe adding two numbers. You can do a lot of work while you're waiting on that to happen.
Mm.
So one thing, I mean, just moving from single-threaded to multi-threaded programming can be difficult enough to debug. Do you get into situations? I mean, I'm just wondering how you go about troubleshooting something where you expect some sort of callback and it never happens.
Yeah, it's tricky. It's nice in that there's only one thread and you're guaranteed only one thing is happening at a time. You're never going to get preempted. You're not going to have between this line of code and this line of code, something else happened. That's impossible. But like you said, what will happen is maybe a callback won't fire, or maybe you didn't synchronize something right and there's a race condition. And if this thing is faster than that thing, your logic is wrong. And so you have those kinds of problems. And it's particularly difficult when you have an error. The stacks are very short because the stack is only for that item in the event queue. Each time it's a new item in the event queue, it's a brand new stack. Each callback is a brand new stack. So the thing that set the callback, that stack is gone. And when you get your stack trace, it's maybe four items long. And so Ryan's, the creator of Node, is working on some ways of turning on a debug mode where it records all the previous stacks from the things that create the callbacks so that you're able to find out how you got there. But in normal production mode, there's no way of knowing. You just know the current event, and that's it.
So then the other thing that leads to is how you're managing state. Like, so I get a callback. My callback passes me everything I need as far as context in order to do what I, in order to complete the request.
Yeah, you don't have to do that. And this is the reason that Node was born. Ryan, the creator, his background is in C. He used to write fast event-based systems in C, which is hard because the C language does not have closures. It does not have anonymous functions. And those things are incredibly useful for this style of programming because all of your callbacks can just live in this one closure, and that closure itself has state, just variables that are just laying around in the various scope levels. And then you can just create these anonymous functions on the fly and use those as callbacks, and it's really elegant. So the reason he created Node is to use the JavaScript language, which is much better at this event-style programming. I mean, that's how the browser works. It's all event-based. Mm. So JavaScript people are used to it. The language was made for it.
So I think one of the reasons that server-side JavaScript itself, and Node in particular, is gaining a lot of interest is because of all the things that are happening sort of on the web, or that people expect to happen with HTML5 and the web. So things like WebSockets and browsers leaving connections open to the server. Is that right?
Yeah. So Node opens this whole new use case that wasn't possible. Is that what you were asking?
Right, exactly.
Like in a normal, say you take a PHP server or a Ruby server, where each request is a blocking process or a thread or whatever, you don't want to hold those open for a long time like you'd do with long polling or WebSockets, because then your 1,000 users is now 1,000 threads, and most OSs do not like 1,000 threads. And then if you want to scale to something with, you know, 10,000 or 50,000 users, you're really in trouble. And whereas with Node, it handles that quite well. Each connection is just a small memory hit of a few K, and zero CPU unless it's doing something.
We had some questions come in from Twitter. Matt Podwasaki, who I believe you've met before, or talked to before, he recommended that I ask you about some of your... he pointed out to me that you're quite prolific and you've got a lot of stuff out on Git, including like Haml.js, Couch, in addition to Wheat, which we've already talked about. You know, are there any specific things you'd like to, that you're most interested now, some of those projects or things you'd like to, you know, point people's attention to?
Okay. I love GitHub because it's a great community, a way to just make code and share it. I checked earlier today, I think I have 47 repositories on there, which is probably way too many. Mm. Most of my projects, I just make them, see if they stick, and a lot of them fall away. The Wheat project is being used by a few people. Connect was something I worked on for Sencha. They hired me for the summer, and it's actually on their GitHub over on Sencha Labs, but that's the middleware layer for Node. If you want to make a web server, it's a great way to layer things together. Some ones that I use a lot, I use my step library for flow control. So if you want to do maybe two asynchronous things at once and be notified when they're both done, it handles things like that really well. Hmm. The Haml.js library is just my naive port of Haml to JavaScript. It's decent code, but it works. It runs how-to Node. TJ, he's Vision Media on GitHub, has a couple other template languages. He's got his own Haml, and he's got one called Jade. They're slightly better code. I think Jade's pretty solid.
So one of the things that I've heard people like Matthew Ernst and TJ mention is the idea that you can write the same code on the client as you do on the server and use the same framework in both areas. I know that Matthew's framework, Getty, which is an MVC-style framework, he has that as a goal so that you can write the same kind of templating code on the server that you do on the client. And there's no need to, you know, output stuff from the server specifically and then deal with it differently like you have to in Rails or in ASP.NET God help you, Java struts or anything like that. And I was wondering kind of what your opinion was on that, because I don't see a lot of people doing that outside of, at least in a lot of the Node stuff I see, but I've only looked at a few frameworks. But I can kind of see how that would be a lot more powerful than the current abstractions that we have over the DOM on the server side, say in Rails or in ASP.NET.
So Matthew's been doing that with Getty. The YUI guys are actually doing a lot of that. You should go check out Dave Glass's talk he did at Yahoo a while back. They've got YUI 3 where it runs on the server side or the client side, and it's really elegant the way they did it. Sharing code, there's a few technical things. Sure, it's the same language, but not really. Not all browsers speak the modern JavaScript dialect that V8 has in Node, and on top of that, it's not the same environment. In Node, we have these requirable modules that have their own namespace, whereas in the browser, everything gets dumped in the same global space. And to make things require the same in both of them requires either boilerplate or some interesting libraries, and there's a lot of libraries out there, but it's not always straightforward. They are different environments. They're just much closer than they used to be. I mean, it's hard to write Ruby code that runs in the browser. So in a way, JavaScript is living up to the original promise of Java, where it's be able to run on both places. I had an early experiment on this a while back when I was trying to redo the Node documentation, and I'd written this engine, is what I called it, and it was basically a specified set of APIs that had require and various things, and then I implemented them in the browser and in Node. And then I wrote modules that could run on either against that engine. And so in the URL, if you replace the question mark for a hashtag, it would render everything in the browser. But if you did a question mark, it would render everything on the server. It was an interesting experiment, but definitely the things that Getty's doing, like sharing your model validation code, is something you really do want to share. You don't want to write that twice. So I think there's a lot of promise in that idea. It's just not as easy as people might think.
So as we're talking about all these different libraries and packages, a lot of that obviously just comes with keeping up with it, reading, you know, seeing what people are doing. I did notice that there was a package manager, NVM.
NPM,
I think. Sorry.
I think there's another one too. It didn't get as much traction. I thought it was named after like a fruit or a vegetable or something, but maybe I'm thinking of something else.
You're thinking of kiwi.
Right. That's what it was. Yeah, kiwi.
Yeah, TJ made kiwi, but eventually NPM won. When TJ started using NPM instead of kiwi, that kind of ended it.
So is NPM kind of your standard, you know, package manager that you'd expect elsewhere? Is there anything? I mean,
it's pretty standard. Isaac wrote that. He actually works at Joyent with Ryan, so I'd say it's quite official now.
Huh.
Pretty much everyone uses it. And there's a lot of modules that are in NPM that aren't on that modules page on the wiki. So last time I checked, there's like over 1,000 different Node modules if you aggregate all the different sources. There's a lot of stuff out there.
Wow.
Yeah, that's one of the interesting things about Node is, and even the Ruby on Rails community took a couple of years to kind of ramp up. But this, I mean, it almost feels like last year, if you would have said Node.js, no one would have known what you were talking about. And now, I mean, it's almost, it at least in certain circles, it's almost all that anyone is talking about. And it's just interesting to see how quickly the community came together. And I'm wondering if it was partially because it started on GitHub. And I don't know what the other component would be. Because stuff on GitHub kind of tends to take on a life of its own because, you know, you follow someone who follows someone who follows someone who's watching something, and you see that they watch it, and you go, oh, well, let's take a look at this and see what's going on. And there's been, of course, this kind of rise with all the JFComp stuff that Chris has been doing in D.C. and in Europe and everywhere else. And so I'm just curious to what everyone else thinks about, you know, how did this Node.js thing get big all of a sudden? Is it just kind of a right place, right time, right framework? Or is there something else here? Is there a new way of kind of developing communities around frameworks or technologies now?
I think it's a few things. I do know of a few different unique places and people that were working on a similar idea. So for one, it was the time for this idea. It solves the problem of real-time web. Well, we need something invented. JavaScript is a good fit. And like you mentioned, GitHub and social media and the new internet definitely makes things move a lot faster. But I think a lot of it is just Ryan's personality. He's a very interesting person. I mean, when I was looking around, it was before it was that popular. Google had indexed it, and I found it when I was searching very deeply for server-side JavaScripts. But this was before he spoke at JSConf and everyone knew about it. But the reason that Node attracted me was because he was doing something different. All the other server-side JavaScripts that used V8 or using Mozilla or whatever, best I could tell, they were just doing the same thing as done in Ruby and PHP, but another language. That did not interest me at all. You cannot beat Rails at its own game. Ruby is really good at what it does. It's a very elegant, very nice language. What it's not very good at is high concurrency and that kind of scaling, because just the way the architecture is. Whereas Node, Ryan puts his foot down and says, blocking I/O is wrong. We're not going to do it. And the API docs were clean. They were simple. They were retro-colored like a man page. It's a very different culture than most of the projects you see. And I think a lot of companies have got on board because they see it solves a lot of their scalability problems, even though it's hard to write sometimes because of these callbacks and the short stack traces. When you just need to scale, there's not many better options. JavaScript is a good language, and it runs pretty fast. So I think just both the unique personalities of the people involved, and it's something we needed.
Speaking of JavaScript, you have a lot of really interesting blog posts on howtonode.org that actually would serve as a foundation for Node, because they're more about the JavaScript language itself.
Well, you were pointing out to me earlier the article on learning JavaScript through graph, like the graph theory or the graph architecture.
Oh, right. You had like a 3-part series on learning JavaScript with object graphs. So this.
Yes.
Interesting. What was the problem you were trying to address with that? Do you think some people approach this language and fundamentally misunderstand it because they're trying to associate it with other languages that have the curly braces?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, and this is a similar thing that Crockford has been addressing for a long time as well, is JavaScript looks like Java. It looks like C. It looks like PHP. And that was on purpose. That was in the design when they made it. Netscape told Brendan to do that. However, it doesn't really act like them. So people come in, the syntax looks familiar. It sort of acts like what they think it's doing. And you can actually have a career using JavaScript and not really understand it. Now, if you want to be an expert and be successful, you need to dig and understand it. But there's a lot of people out there who can use JavaScript and get real things done and make real projects without truly understanding the language. And that's fine. But when you start getting into Node and you start getting into these heavy callbacks and lots of I/O, much more than the browser has, that doesn't work anymore. Because you have to truly understand closures and callbacks and functions and constructors and how objects are created and how memory is allocated. Because if you don't, your server is going to be impossible to write.
Mm.
It's just harder.
In a way, you're really scaling up. And I don't mean scaling up in terms of number of connections this time. I just mean the complexity of what you're building can scale up. You can only put so much JavaScript in a web page. But yeah, if you're writing a server-side application, right, you have to have a way to manage all of these features and requirements that you want to implement.
Well, and also the scope of what you can mess up blows up too. You know, like if you're just throwing some JavaScript into a web page, the worst that happens is the page doesn't load or is slow to load or whatever. You know what I mean? As opposed to working on a server, you can really do some damage.
Yeah, if your Node process goes down, you just lost 10,000 clients.
Right.
Well, I was thinking more along the lines that you'd lose all the benefits of having non-blocking I/O by having, you know, really slow code or strange little scoping bugs. Most of the time when I talk to people about JavaScript or give any kind of classes, I never get past scope. Like there's all sorts of stuff to talk about, you know, function constructors versus expressions and yada, yada, yada. And we never get past just how scope works inside of closures, outside of closures and everything else. And all that is still true in the Node.js environment. So there's been kind of this, and I don't mean this in a negative way, but there's been this jQueryification of JavaScript, where people think, you know, well, I don't really have to learn JavaScript. I'll just learn jQuery. And as long as there's a jQuery plugin, then I can do it. But, you know, even though jQuery may be running on the server side on a Node server at some point, you know, it's still not going to be the kind of jQuery experience where you just, you know, pass in a selector and go, and the plugin is written well enough that you don't have to really worry about what's going on under the guts.
Yeah, and maybe someday you can do that. I mean, there is nothing wrong with being able to write code without knowing the guts of a system, and that's a good thing. But the state at which Node is right now, it's still maturing quite rapidly. You have to know what you're doing to significantly write frameworks and libraries that help out.
One of the things that I was wondering, if anyone has married CoffeeScript with Node yet.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the CoffeeScript guys, actually, early on, I worked for Jeremy at Document Cloud this spring for a short time, the creator of CoffeeScript. And I was writing, back then, the CoffeeScript compiler was written in Ruby. And I was writing a version written in Node because, hey, it's JavaScript. Why don't have your compiler written in JavaScript and then the compiler can self-host. And I got busy and he took over the compiler and wrote it. But the current CoffeeScript compiler is written in Node. And there's even this extension hook in Node's require system where you can register this other extension and pre-process the code. And so you can just take CoffeeScript code and require it as if it was a native Node module. Hmm. You just don't see a lot of them on the mailing list because they have their own mailing list.
You know, going back a little bit and talking about jQuery, I think that so many people think for good and for bad can't think of JavaScript outside of the DOM, you know, and so, you know, like the whole reason that jQuery was so magical for so many people is it abstracted the DOM away and you didn't have to worry about, you know, you didn't have to think about it so much. And so I think a lot of why people are getting to like JavaScript now is because, you know, it's not JavaScript that was so frustrating in the past. It was the browser differences and just the DOM itself, you know. And so I'm thinking, you know, for good and for bad, jQuery has definitely changed how people look at JavaScript as a language too. I don't know what I meant. If I should have phrased that in the form of a question.
Yeah, what was the question, John?
It just takes something like Node to kind of break away your thinking, because for so long that was the only place where JavaScript ran was in the browser. I mean, sure, you had like Rhino or SpiderMonkey or something if you really wanted to do something like that and run it in a command line. But one of the first things that, and this wasn't too long ago, maybe I've had kids, so it could have been 5 years ago. I don't know. When I think it was IBM wrote an OS in JavaScript, including a windowing system and everything. And that kind of, you know, it was surprising to a lot of people because they were so used to stuff, you know, just running in the browser. And here was the idea that, yeah, the OS still ran inside the browser, but I mean, you had a scheduler, you had a virtualized, you know, kind of hardware abstraction, not really hardware abstraction layer, but a browser abstraction layer, I guess, over this. And you know, it did all the kinds of things that an OS would do. It had a API that you could write JavaScript code and create apps within it. I should look that up and find the name of it and get a link in the show notes. But it was one of the first things that really made me think, oh, so, you know, even though JavaScript is really cool in the browser, people are starting to use it kind of outside and for things other than, you know, just making the mouse rollovers.
So in the early days of Node, it seemed like there was just tremendous activity around, you know, building out all these modules. You know, there was three or four different package managers. Everybody was rolling their own little MVC frameworks. And now it seems like, well, like on the package management side, things have sort of settled down and people have coalesced on some, you know, some standard solutions. Is that starting to happen more in the Node space, or is it still in that kind of hyper experimental, everybody's building everything kind of mode?
It's definitely maturing some. Some telltale signs, like the IRC channel has more people in it than ever. Like some days there's 400 people in there, but there's much less chatter than there used to be because people are busily writing code and writing applications and getting things done. Before, it was constant discussing maybe 2-3 conversations at once about what we should do and ideas about what this framework would be. And I think there's a lot more now of people writing actual applications and things for their work. And so they're in the IRC room in case they have a question, but they're busily working. I don't know if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I mean, like NPM, for example, is the de facto package manager. I don't know of anyone who's tried to compete with that recently. And I made Connect as a middleware framework, and there's a few others, and people still make their own MVC framework for fun just because it's easy to make and it's fun. But you don't see those announcements as often. Now you see this cool new module that we didn't have before, or more often, this new site that runs on Node, or this new company that's using Node.
So what do you think of ECMAScript, and where's it going in the future? And do you think that this explosion of interest in server-side JavaScript, do you think that's going to change the language in the future?
So I follow the ESDiscuss mailing list just to see what's going on. And there's a lot of things in Harmony that are interesting, like in particular proxies, which are now being shipped in Firefox 4. But as a whole, I think the language is pretty stable. Mm. ECMA 5 is what Node runs now, and it can do almost anything you need. There's a few cases where we would wish it had this one feature, but most of the time it's great. And once all the browsers implement that, we'll be able to share code better. I know there are a lot of people who want to change the language, some drastically, but I think a lot of that's just not going to happen because it's not really needed, mm-hmm. and people don't want to break the web.
Right, right.
So we had another question from Twitter from Jackson Harper, and he asked about no.de, just like what the status is, what's...
So no.de is Joyn's node service. They launched it as part of the Node Knockout contest, and I think they announced with their ownership of Node announcement that they're going to continue that as a service and sell it. It's technically, it's a pretty cool platform. It's Solaris with what are called Solaris zones and ZFS file system. The technology stack is really interesting and really efficient, and it'll be interesting to see what they do. But there's also competition from other people doing node hosting. I know some people over at Nojitsu in New York who are doing their own node hosting system on top of Linux using some more traditional stack.
So we talked before about Couch. I know there's a post on there about Mongo. Obviously, using JSON, you know, as a data storage format works pretty well for JavaScript. Is that kind of the standard for the whole NoSQL approach for databases? Do you see any relational database use? I don't know. What's the whole data story?
Okay. So early on, one of my very first Node projects was actually a Postgres driver. I used PostgreSQL a lot in my past jobs. The challenge there was the protocol is binary. And at the time, there was no way to bind to C libraries. We had to write everything in JavaScript. And so I ended up having to implement the Postgres wire protocol in JavaScript, which is not easy.
Yeah.
And was even harder back then because we didn't have a binary data type in Node. We just had to encode our strings a certain way, and it would turn them into binary on the way out. It was really slow. It was horrible. But for two reasons, I think the JSON-based ones are more popular. One, Node is new, Node is hot, and Node is JavaScript. Those are new, they're hot, and JSON is JavaScript. It's a great fit. But two, when you're writing these drivers, if the protocol is text-based, like CouchDB is just HTTP, it's a lot easier to write a driver. There aren't really Couch drivers. There's Couch clients that abstract over some of it and make it a little easier to use. But you want a Couch driver, it's the built-in HTTP client node. There's your driver. You're done. And then things like Redis, you can telnet to a Redis server, just type some commands, and you're interfacing with it. You don't need this complex binary protocol. So, I mean, one, they're new, they're nice, they fit well, and two, it's easier to interface with them.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But yeah, as far as support, there's semi-mature things out there for MySQL, Postgres, pretty mature for Mongo. Those are all binary protocols. And then for the other stuff, there's tons of drivers.
So we have a lot of listeners who run mostly Windows computers. And I think, Scott, you've tried to get Node running on Windows, or you just did it under Linux?
I did it under Linux, but I've done the Cygwin route, and I've also I posted a guide on just, you know, grabbing a turnkey Linux VM and VirtualBox and getting it all set up, so that at least you can dev it on Windows, if not necessarily in Windows. But I have heard that, and I haven't been able to find the GitHub repository or wherever it's at, but I have heard they're trying to get it compiled using the mini GW compiler and have it running on Windows itself rather than inside of Cygwin. But like I said, I haven't been able to find that or find out what the status is of it.
Interesting. Yeah, I don't know about a min GW one. The ones I know of, I'll use Cygwin. The Cloud9 guys, AjaxOrg, actually distribute binaries with Cygwin pre-bundled, so you can just go to their repository and get Node for Windows. I mean, it runs on Windows, and they even have this built-in IDE that runs in your browser with breakpoint debugging and everything. But a more interesting thing is I'm hoping that we can get a native Windows port that uses the native Windows toolkit, or at least MinGW, and not depend on the Cygwin DLLs. The Windows operating system actually has some pretty good calls for true asynchronous I/O, a thing that we don't have in Linux and other Unix systems. File system I/O is blocking. Node actually has a thread pull to make the file system interfaces look non-blocking. Mm-hmm. And there's times where if you do a whole lot of concurrent I/O, all those threads in that thread pull really kill your performance. And so there's potential that if someone with the resources and the know-how could make a really good solid Windows port. The problem is there's just not a lot of people in the community who know Windows or have the skills to do that or even want to do that.
Mm-hmm. The intersection of the people that know that have that Windows level expertise and even have heard of Node.js is probably pretty small, right?
Yeah, I'm hoping that companies maybe like Microsoft will pick it up and give some resources to help out. That would be great.
I agree.
If only we get on that Microsoft.
or any company that uses Windows and wants to use Node. It's just we don't have the expertise in the community. Most of us use Macs or Linux. I mean, there's a few other things, but that's pretty much it.
Did find a wiki page at Ryan Dahl's Node repository here with notes on the Windows port and kind of what has to be done to get it running on there. So we'll have that in the show notes.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, from reading that before, it looked like it was that there were things that weren't supported in Windows. So it's good to hear that it's the pieces are there. It just needs to be put together.
Yeah, I mean the problem is it's all based on these Unix event loop libraries that are based entirely on Unix APIs. And it's not a one-to-one port to a Windows operating system. It just works different at that level. Mm-hmm. So it's a pretty considerable port and rewrite of a lot of the lower stuff.
Well, and there might be some things that could be handled differently to take advantage of Windows, like you were saying. So instead of using threads or processes everywhere, maybe use jobs. I don't know how much that would help, or you know, because I know just enough. Actually, I don't even know enough C to cause a seg fault. So anymore, so my C would run perfectly because it wouldn't be any more than a loop and maybe incrementing something. So. It looks like there's been some thought put towards it. So that's always interesting. Of course, what I think what a lot of us really want are we want the iron.js. We want running on the DLR, and we want to be able to, port the Node API. If not Node.js itself, we want to be able to port the API to a server side JavaScript environment that can run natively on Windows, so that we can get all of the great Node modules that are out there and just run them without having to, worry about recompiling V8 engine and everything else for Windows.
Yeah, that's a different way to do it. Is as long as the runtime has the necessary non-blocking APIs, you could do that. But that also is a lot of work, though.
Yeah.
An example of something like that, have you guys heard of MacRuby?
Yeah.
I mean, basically, they took the Ruby language and re-implemented it on top of Objective-C's runtime, because Objective-C is a runtime, or has a runtime in it. Mm-hmm. And that runtime supports enough dynamic features that they were able to implement Ruby in it. And so it's a completely different VM, but it runs natively on Macs. It has access to everything in Cocoa natively. There's no bridging required. So I'm sure you could do the same thing with the Microsoft libraries and frameworks, as long as it had all the tools and dynamic stuff you needed.
So as I was, trying to get more up to speed on Node and not be completely uninformed, I was getting things set up. I went the Ubuntu route, but so obviously as you're going through that, you need to solve problems and things don't work and you have to figure out why. How to Node was a great resource for a lot of that, but then other things, as I got stuck, I just searched around. What's the community support? How do people get questions asked and answered? How do people get up to speed on Node?
So the two main support, well, three, depending on where you live. So there's the IRC room, which is very active. If you go in there, it's one of the most friendly IRC rooms in the world. Somebody will answer your question and help you out. There's the Node mailing list, where if you have something that's a more lengthy thing or a more detailed question, and someone will give you an answer there almost all the time. And if you happen to live in an area where there's a lot of Node people, like in the California, San Francisco Bay Area, there's meetups all the time. You can just meet people in person and ask them your questions. There's no forums or anything like that. It's just the IRC and the mailing list.
Okay.
And you are at a meetup this evening. Is that what you were saying?
Yeah, I was at Google, and the local JavaScript users group was having a Node meetup.
Awesome.
So earlier I talked about a JavaScript OS that I thought was written by IBM, and I was wrong. It was written by Sun. It was called the Lively Kernel, and so now it's in Oracle limbo kind of land. but it does exist, and it was an interesting experiment. Oh, and it's open source under the MIT license, so we can get it and play with it still.
I've had that bookmarked quite a while. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Tim, I was curious, if you're working on something on Node or on Wheat or, one of these projects, and I look at your screen, What am I seeing? I'm just wondering what your development environment's like.
It's actually changed recently.
Hmm.
It would have been, if you'd seen it this summer, it would have been on a MacBook Pro using TextMate and Terminal and maybe a browser with an IRC window, and that's about it. I don't like to use IDEs. They get in the way more than help when you're doing JavaScript, I think.
Hmm.
But that was my work computer, and I switched jobs, and I now work at HP, and so I have this nice HP laptop running Linux. But again, it's just gedit, which is the closest thing to TextMate, and a terminal, and a browser, and IRC.
Okay, awesome.
So if I was, you know, starting a new web project, my sexy new web 2.0 startup, and was going to, you know, looking at something like Rails or like Django or whatever as my stack, you know, should I be looking at Node for just a straight up, you know, web stack, or is it really more these, you know, high performance WebSockety, like, you know, mobile, whatever? I mean, does it have a good sweet spot, right? Just straight up, you know, web development?
Yeah, I mean, it depends. I actually had someone who was doing a startup call me and ask about this the other day. And with Node, you have a different set of challenges. Of course, there's the option you can do lots of real-time scalability and not have to worry about that as much. But even if you don't care about that, there's other perks. One, you're writing JavaScript. Modern websites have a lot of heavy front-end JavaScript, and it's great to reuse all that skill to write your back-end code and maybe share code across both ends. And it's easier to attract the talent, the good talent, if you're doing new technologies, new interesting things. And Node certainly fits that bill right now. So you'll be able to get top-notch talent if you're using these interesting technologies. Of course, then you have the other challenges of it's not quite as mature and it's a different style of coding. And so if you're not used to that, it's going to be hard. So, I mean, it depends on what challenges you want. There's quite a few startups choosing it.
So I'm going to be the first one to throw out the big E word. Anyone know what I'm talking about? So what's the penetration, do you think, of Node into the enterprise?
It depends what you mean by enterprise.
Large, slow-moving corporations.
Slow. Well, we're using it at HP. I guess that counts.
Yeah.
That is not non-trivial. You're talking about putting it in the web OS, right?
Yeah, I mean, they were Palm at the time, which is a lot smaller, but that's one way to get it into an enterprise company, by getting acquired.
Gotcha.
Now, I know that large, newer companies are using it. Places like Yahoo and maybe Facebook and those kind of sites are using it for various parts.
Really? Because they've got, Facebook has their own Tornado, I'm thinking? Or is that something else?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, what I've found is most of these companies, there's lots of individual developers who want to use Node and are making cases for it and are working on it, and a lot of times they're successful. I don't know of many at all that are using it in production yet.
There was a great book back when the Ruby hype really started to turn. I think it was by Bruce Eckel, the Thinking in Java, Thinking in C++ author guy. It was kind of a subversive book about how to convert your Java-based management thinkers into using Ruby. And one of the things was, you know, you find some trivial project that, you know, is only going to help like a small group of people, and you do that in Ruby. And you show them how much less time it took and how much better it is. And then, you know, you start to work your way up to medium-sized projects. And I started to see people in the enterprise talk about using Sinatra in the same way whenever someone said, we need to create a web service, you know, so that this partner can consume this or something like that. And I'm wondering if that's kind of the sweet spot for Node too, where they're saying, you know, we just need to create this little service that does this thing that Joe over in accounting needs.
And yeah, I mean, if
they're going to start, you know, kind of sliding it in that way.
I've seen some of that Express is a lot like Sinatra. So if you want to do web services, it's pretty easy to do in Express. And then things that are more Node sweet spot, I've seen people make HTTP proxies that have some unique features, like maybe it'll meter the bandwidth or some sort of access control.
Hmm.
And that's not that hard to do in Node. And to be able to just throw that out in a few days of work is impressive.
Well, it seemed like to be able to complete it in a few days of work, and also to have something that's extensible and not, you know, several hundred, whatever, just maybe more difficult to manage, you know, C++ thing that nobody can read, as opposed to JavaScript, which is complex, but is at least, you know, more familiar probably.
Yeah. One thing that I've always said is when people are comparing Node against, say, Nginx or Apache and serving static files is, sure, handwritten Optimize-C is probably faster than JavaScript. Although I've found that's not always the case. The JIT engine in V8 is pretty amazing. But even so, the real benefit of Node is you're writing your HTTP server from a blank file. You say, require HTTP, do this, and in 10 lines, you just wrote an HTTP server. So if you want to do some custom logic, you don't have to go look up the crazy config in Nginx or write this module in C or do all these really difficult things to just change the behavior of the server because you're writing the server. Just add in that line, and then it does that new custom behavior. And so when you're caching data, you understand your application state and structure. You can do really aggressive caching that a generic server like Nginx couldn't do. My Weed Engine, for example, knows that it's all based on Git. And you can go to any URL in my website and prepend the Git SHA in the URL. It'll show you the article at that version. And my caching layer knows that that will never, ever change because that's a unique SHA in the Git repository. And it hangs onto it as long as it wants to. It doesn't have to worry about cache and validation. You can't make those kind of assumptions with a generic server. So in some ways, it's a lot more powerful.
Yeah, that's very interesting. We didn't talk a lot about the API, and I know we're just over an hour now, so we'll have to think about wrapping up pretty soon. But if anyone goes to nodejs.org, they can go into the documentation, see some code samples. It's really kind of interesting when you can just say http.createServer and then have a function that takes a pass in a function that takes a request and a response parameter. So I'm guessing those kind of context type parameters are going to be used quite a bit with a framework like Node.
Yeah, for things that do connections or open a file, there's usually a callback where it gives you the data. Anything that's IO. And then there's some things that are event-based, like a data stream. You listen for data events. You listen for an end event. There might be an error event. And they're just regular event listeners like you'd have on a DOM element. You'd listen for click or mouse over. Same type of thing. So there's a lot of event emitters and a lot of callbacks.
Yeah, I thought the emitters were interesting too. So what would be a scenario where you would use that?
So like a custom event emitter, when I wrote my Postgres protocol, in the Postgres wire protocol, there's all these different message types. And so I've got my parser that's taken data events off the TCP stream, ran them through the state machine, and as it processes messages, it generates these various named events. Like there is a ready for query event or a this event or a that event. And so I just have this emitter that takes in raw TCP events, which are just chunks of binary data, and then spits out processed events that are the messages from the server. And so it works great. Events work great for any use case where you're going to have something happening more than once or different things happening or not happening at all. And callbacks are good for use cases where you're calling a function and eventually it's either going to give you a result or an error. And it's going to be one and it's going to be either of them.
Mm-hmm. I also found it interesting that to write a module, you basically just have a JavaScript file and you don't have to worry about putting everything into a specific closure or looking for a specific global object.
Yeah, it follows the securable module spec from CommonJS, which is really simple and really elegant. Node actually wraps the file for you in a closure or uses a V8 context, depending on some option you set. But either way, that module, if you create local variables in it, they don't leak out elsewhere. It's as if it was in its own space.
Okay.
And then you just explicitly export whatever you want exported.
And I think that a lot of the common.js module implementation or specification is getting ported forward to Harmony. Or at least in some form or another, they're going to have modules in Harmony.
That's still active debate right now on the list. There's a few proposals. And I think the one Node uses is called Securable Modules. It's a fairly simple one. There's another one called Simple Modules that isn't simple at all and has all these changes to the language itself. And I think there's maybe even a couple other proposals in there. But yeah, I mean, the interesting thing about the Securable Modules is it's implementable today with the current syntax. So... and it's pretty simple. Some of the other suggestions actually change the syntax so that there is no global leakage in the language anymore at all, and various things.
The one thing I want changed in the syntax of the language is I want a shortcut for creating lambdas.
Yeah.
Really, I just, you know, just even if they just shorten it down to F, you know, that's fine. just.
Well, you can do that in Node. You can register a preprocessor for your code. You'll just have to write a parser for JavaScript.
Oh, awesome. There's a preprocessor.
I mean, that's how the CoffeeScript guys hook in.
Yeah, okay.
But you could take all these Fs and replace them with function. You just don't want to do it naively because one of those Fs are in a string or somewhere else or whatnot.
Yeah.
But I've thought a few times about doing that, or maybe just having a lambda or the curly F that's easy to type on a Mac.
Awesome. And Harmony, by the way, that's the next version of ECMAScript? That's the code name?
Either the next version or just a test bed of ideas to go in the next version. Okay. I don't think the whole thing as a whole is going to go in at once at all. But yeah, that's where the ideas are.
Okay. All right, gentlemen, what do you think? Should we take one last question? If anyone has one last question, wrap things up. Kevin, last chance. Scott, no? All right, then the last question would be, so Tim, do you have anything coming up? Do you do some presentations? Are there any meetings or conferences you want people to know about, or projects or websites you'd like to point people to?
Let's see. I don't know of anything that is announced yet. I know there's a lot of meetups and conferences and type things that are still in the planning stage. Just be on the lookout for those.
Okay.
I've been busy the last week, just head down in my new job and learning all the interesting, awesome stuff they have there.
Well, that's good. That's good. And you have time to hang out at Google a little bit for a hangout. That's good. All right. Well, I think that makes an episode. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you.
And tune in again next time.